Imagine a massive category four hurricane is just bearing down on a major coastal city.
Right, a total worst-case scenario.
Exactly. The power grid takes a direct hit from flying debris, and the local hospital's connection to the main utility is completely severed. But, the backup generators immediately kick in.
As they should.
Right. But then a minor electrical fault occurs deep in the hospital's basement switch room, and suddenly the entire campus goes completely dark anyway. The generators are running, but the power just, well, it isn't reaching the life support machines.
Which is terrifying.
It really is. And why does it happen? Because of a single, highly calculated engineering decision made, like, decades ago regarding a piece of copper you will never even see.
Yeah, it's basically the ultimate invisible architecture. I mean, we often think of power outages as these physical, visible events, right? A tree falling on a line or a transformer
Oh,
exploding.
for sure. The dramatic stuff.
Exactly. But the true vulnerability of any electrical system is actually dictated by choices made on a drafting table years before a facility is even built.
It's wild to think about.
It is. The layout of those hidden nodes, the ones connecting the power sources to the loads, that determines whether a localized fault causes just a brief, unnoticeable flicker or a catastrophic total blackout.
And decoding that hidden architecture, that's our mission for this deep dive. We are taking a massive stack of source materials and extracting the underlying logic of substation busbar topologies. Specifically, we're weighing the two heavyweights of grid design, the single busbar scheme versus the double busbar scheme.
And the documentation guiding us here is incredibly rigorous. We are looking at foundational international engineering standards, like IEC 619361.
Which is basically the rule book, right?
Pretty much, it dictates the strict design requirements for high voltage power installations. We're also analyzing IEC 37.010, which covers breaker applications, alongside some technical reliability guidance from the Global Power System Organization, CIGRE.
Right. And to ground all that theory in reality, we've got specific manufacturer application notes from industry giants, ABB, Schneider Electric, and GE.
So we have a really solid technical foundation to work from.
We do. And the goal here is to understand how engineers make these high-stakes system-level decisions. I mean, they are constantly forced to balance massive upfront capital costs against the terrifying prospect of a vital facility just shutting down.
It's a huge balancing act.
Exactly. And for you listening, while substation busbar topology sounds like some hyper-niche electrical engineering seminar, this is the exact mathematical framework that dictates the resilience of your local hospital.
Or the data centers holding your financial records.
Yeah, or just the broader grid powering your neighborhood.
You really don't think about it until the lights go out. But every single time you flip a switch, you are relying on the outcome of the exact engineering debate we are unpacking today.
So true. So let's start by defining the physical reality of what we are actually talking about here. We keep using the word busbar.
Right, let's define that.
Drawing from the IE standards, we need to clarify that a busbar isn't just a thick piece of metal, it's really the central nervous system of the facility.
Yeah, looking at a physical piece of switchgear, it is easy to just see a heavy copper or aluminum bar mounted on insulators. But from a topological standpoint, the bus bar is the vital shared node.
The intersection point.
Exactly. It is the mandatory intersection point for incoming power, which engineers call incomers, and outgoing power lines, known as feeders.
Got it.
It also serves as the anchor point for transformer bays and incredibly complex protective relay zones.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it like a really busy international airport hub. Every single electrical flight, every massive surge of current coming in from the utility, and every carefully managed distribution line going out to a factory floor, it has to land at and depart from this central hub.
That's a great way to visualize it.
Right. And if the hub is poorly designed or gets overwhelmed, all flights are grounded instantly.
And because it acts as that universal shared node, any structural change to this topology alters the fundamental operability of the entire plant.
It changes everything.
It really does. The IEC standards and the manufacturer literature hammer this point home. Selecting a busbar scheme dictates your outage management strategy, your maintenance schedule, and even the sheer volume of short circuit energy your equipment must survive.
Wow.
Yeah. It is the blueprint for how the facility will behave on its worst possible day.
Which brings us to the absolute baseline of power distribution, the single busbar scheme.
The classic.
Yeah. According to ABB's Unigear ZS1 documentation. This is the most direct, unfiltered form of substation arrangement. You have one common main bus. All your incomers bringing power in and all your feeders taking power out, they just bolt directly to the single continuous bar, each separated by their own circuit breaker.
And in normal everyday operation, every single live circuit depends entirely on that one single piece of metal.
Which sounds risky, but I guess there's an upside.
Oh, definitely. The appeal is straightforward. It is incredibly space efficient, so the footprint of the switchgear building can be kept really small, and the capital cost is as low as it gets.
Makes sense.
Plus, the protection zones, the digital relays monitoring the system for faults, are very simple to program because there is only one path for the power to flow.
Okay, but the fatal flaw here is just glaring. If a fault hits that bus bar directly, say, I don't know, a rat chews through an insulator, or a mechanical bracket snaps and causes a massive short circuit right on the main metal, every single connected circuit is taken out simultaneously.
Yes, instantly.
The main breakers trip to clear the fault, and the entire station just goes dark. This sounds like having a massive million-dollar home theater system plugged into a single, cheap power strip, one spilled glass of water, and everything goes dark.
Yeah, you're basically forced to de-energize the entire facility. There is no alternative path.
None at all.
None. To clear the fault, or even just to perform routine cleaning and tighten to the bolts on the bus bar, you have to cut power to every customer connected to it.
That seems like an unbelievable risk. If we use the airport analogy again, it's like having only one runway for thousands of daily flights. One pothole on that runway, and the whole airport shuts down. Given the stakes of modern electricity, why would anyone risk that? Why is this still the most common setup deployed globally?
Well, what's fascinating here is how the CIE reliability findings offer a very pragmatic view on this. A single bus isn't an engineering failure.
It's not.
No, it's actually a highly efficient solution for specific economic constraints. It concentrates risk, undoubtedly, but it drastically lowers the initial barrier to building infrastructure.
Ah, okay. So it's a calculated gamble on the acceptable level of pain for a given customer base.
Exactly. They map out the acceptable consequences. For a standard residential distribution network, or say, a light commercial industrial park, a power outage is a nuisance.
Right. It might spoil some groceries.
Or halt production for an afternoon. But it is not a catastrophic safety failure or a multi-million-dollar disaster. When the design target is providing economical service rather than guaranteeing maximum continuous operation, the single bus bar just provides the best return on investment.
I see. You don't build a titanium vault just to protect your lawnmower.
Right.
But there has to be a middle ground, right? Let's look at mid-tier facilities, maybe a municipal water pumping station or a larger manufacturing plant. A total blackout is a huge operational hazard, but the municipality or the company absolutely does not have the budget to build an entire secondary redundant substation.
Which happens all the time.
So how do engineers mitigate that single point of failure without doubling the cost?
The sources detail two really fascinating workarounds for this exact scenario. Mm. We can kind of think of them as redundancy light.
Okay, I like that. Redundancy light.
The first method is called bus sectionalization, and the ADB REX640 documentation outlines the mechanics of this beautifully. Instead of one solid continuous bar, you cut that single bus in half and connect the two sections with a dedicated bus section circuit breaker.
Wait, that sounds exactly like designing watertight bullheads on a ship.
That is the perfect mechanical comparison. You don't have two separate ships, but if the hull is breached on the port side, you seal the bulkhead.
Right, to stop the flooding.
In electrical terms, if a massive short circuit occurs on the left side of the bus bar, the sectionalizing breaker detects the massive current spike and trips open in milliseconds. The left side goes dark, but the right side remains fully energized and operational.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you have essentially contained the blast radius of the fault to half your facility.
That is a massive upgrade in resilience for the cost of just one extra breaker.
But the source also mentioned a second workaround, heavily discussed by GE and the National Academies, called the main and transfer bus bar variant.
Yes, that one is quite different. Yeah, from reading the schematics, this involves building the main bus, but then adding a secondary parallel piece of copper, the transfer bus. But here is the critical limitation. That transfer bus is only used to keep a specific circuit active when its regular breaker is pulled out for maintenance.
Exactly. The maintenance aspect is the entire driving force behind that design.
Really? Just for maintenance?
Yeah. And to understand why, we have to unpack a critical piece of technical terminology, the difference between a circuit breaker and an isolator switch.
Let's do that, because the documentation uses those terms almost interchangeably at first glance, but they serve totally, entirely different physical functions.
They do.
Yeah.
A circuit breaker is a massive, heavily engineered device designed to extinguish the violent plasma arcs created when you interrupt thousands of amps of fault current. It safely breaks a live loaded circuit.
Okay, an isolator.
An isolator, however, is essentially just a physical metal hinge. It provides visible physical separation for safety, but it cannot be opened while current is flowing.
Wait, what happens if you do?
If you open an isolator under a heavy load, the electricity will simply jump through the air, creating a lethal arc flash that totally destroys the equipment.
Oh, terrifying. Okay, so in a standard single bus system, if a massive circuit breaker needs to be taken out of the cabinet for its annual mechanical servicing, you have to turn off the power to that entire line just to safely open the isolators around it.
Yes. The main and transfer scheme solves this by allowing you to route the power from that specific incoming line onto the reserve transfer bus.
I see.
It bypasses the breaker that needs maintenance and feeds it back into the main system through a dedicated transfer breaker.
Okay, I have to challenge the logic of this, though. If a facility is already going through the trouble of dedicating the physical real estate for a second bus bar, buying the extra copper, and wiring up these complex bypass lanes just to do maintenance, why stop there?
I know what you're going to ask.
Right. Why not just make the transfer bus a fully functional permanent second bus? Are designers just penny-pinching? It feels like they're artificially hobbling their own system.
It totally looks that way on the surface. But the National Academy's breakdown of grid resilience clarifies the structural reality here. It comes down to the physical rating of the equipment.
What do you mean?
Well, the transfer bus in this scheme is structurally lightweight. It is not rated to carry the massive fault currents of the entire station. And the digital protection relays are not programmed to monitor it as a primary node.
Ah.
It is strictly a temporary bypass lane used perhaps, you know, twice a year. Upgrading it to full operational status requires an exponential leap in structural bracing, sensing equipment, and logic programming.
So it's the difference between driving on the shoulder of the highway to get around a stalled car versus building a permanent 8-lane expressway.
A very clear way to frame it. If you want full operational freedom, the ability to constantly shuffle loads between buses, isolate faults without dropping a single customer, and run both lines hot at all times, you have to enter the realm of the heavyweights.
Which brings us to the ultimate solution for zero downtime environments, the double bus bar scheme.
Yes. According to the IEC 62271-200 standard, true double bus arrangement utilizes two completely independent, fully rated main buses, commonly designated as Bus A and Bus B.
And the architecture here is just brilliant. Every single feeder line going out to the grid has two selector isolators. This means the system operator can choose to physically assign any given outgoing line to either Bus A or Bus B.
Exactly.
So if a catastrophic equipment failure melts a section of Bus A, the system isolates it, and Bus B just continues carrying the critical loads without interruption.
You achieve true, uncompromising separation. An entire bus can be de-energized, grounded, and safely worked on by maintenance crews while the facility continues to pump out 100% of its rated capacity.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. The true genius of the system isn't just having two metal bars. There is a specific mechanical device that makes this dual-track system functional.
The star player.
Yes. Based on the Schneider Electric and ABB technical notes, the MVP of the double bus bar scheme is something called the bus coupler.
Because without the bus coupler, a two-bus layout is rigid and essentially loses its operational magic.
To visualize the bus coupler, we can use the analogy of a high-speed train switchman. Imagine you have two parallel train tracks, track A and track B, both carrying trains running at 200 miles per hour.
Okay.
The bus coupler is the specialized track mechanism that links them together. It allows the operators to take a heavily loaded train and seamlessly slide it from track A to track B without ever forcing the train to slow down or stop.
And the mechanism of how it accomplishes that electrical transfer is basically a master class in physics. The bus coupler is fundamentally a dedicated circuit breaker that sits solely between Bus A and Bus B.
So it doesn't feed any actual power to the outside world?
Nope. It doesn't serve a neighborhood or a factory. Its only job is to manage the electrical relationship between the two main arteries.
And it does this to prevent that terrifying phenomenon we mentioned earlier, the arc flash.
Yes. Because if you attempt to move a loaded feeder from Bus A to Bus B by just throwing the physical isolator switches, The microscopic differences in voltage and phase angle between the two buses will cause the current to violently bridge the air gap.
That sounds bad.
We are talking about plasma, hotter than the surface of the sun, instantly vaporizing copper and steel.
Okay, so how does the coupler prevent the explosion?
When the operator needs to move a load, they first close the bus coupler. This electrically parallels bus A and bus B, locking their voltage, frequency, and phase angle in perfect synchronization.
Like perfectly matching the speed of the two trains.
Exactly. The two buses essentially become one massive electrical body. Once the coupler relay confirms perfect synchronization, the operator can safely close the isolator for the feeder on the new bus and open the isolator on the old bus.
Wow.
The load smoothly transfers. Then the coupler is opened, separating the buses again.
It's a beautifully choreographed dance of high voltage physics, but, you know, magic like that comes with a severe penalty in complexity.
Oh, for sure. The downside is the complexity and the resulting capital expenditure are astronomical. You are doubling the physical copper, doubling the structural footprint of the building, and adding the highly expensive bus coupler bay itself.
And the physical metal isn't even the most difficult part of the installation, is it? The real nightmare is the logic programming.
Yes. The interlocking logic is arguably the most critical component of the entire facility. Because electricity is totally unforgiving of human error, you cannot rely on an operator just remembering the sequence of the dance.
Right.
If a technician accidentally attempts to open a feeder isolator before the bus coupler has synchronized the two buses, the resulting arc flash could easily be fatal.
So the system has to physically and digitally prevent the human from making a mistake.
The switchgear is equipped with intensely complex mechanical key interlocks and digital logic gates. The system physically will not allow the handle of an isolator switch to turn unless the sensors confirm the bus coupler is closed and current is safely flowing through the bypass.
That is incredible.
Designing, testing, and maintaining that logic requires a level of engineering expertise far beyond a standard distribution substation.
Okay, so we've established the two extremes. A single bus is cheap, compact, but incredibly vulnerable. A double bus is infinitely resilient, allows seamless maintenance, but is wildly expensive and requires a genius-level protection system to operate safely.
Exactly.
Now that we understand the extremes, how does an engineering firm sit down with a client and actually make the call on which system gets built?
They rely on the engineering matrix laid out in IEC 619361. Rather than just guessing, the standard provides a rigorous analytical framework based on several interlocking variables. To see how it works in practice, let's imagine a team designing the power infrastructure for a multi-billion dollar semiconductor fabrication plant.
Okay, that is the perfect high-stakes scenario. The first checkpoint in the IEC matrix is load criticality and reliability targets. For a semiconductor plant, I imagine the tolerance for a power dip is essentially zero.
It is absolute zero. In a silicon wafer fabrication line, a voltage dip lasting just 5 seconds can ruin months of microscopic chemical deposition processing.
Oh, man.
It literally destroys millions of dollars of product instantly. In this scenario, the engineering team looks at the single bus bar scheme, sees that a routine maintenance event or a localized fault requires a total shutdown, and immediately discards the single bus option.
Because the cost of one outage vastly exceeds the millions of dollars it costs to install the double bus bar.
Exactly. The business case makes itself. But the matrix also forces the engineers to look at the harsh physical realities of the grid, specifically through the lens of fault duties, utilizing the IEC 60909 calculations.
Yeah, the sources referenced IEC 60909 heavily, and honestly, it reads like a manual for control destruction. How does calculating fault duties dictate the shape of the bus bar?
Well, fault duty is the measurement of the absolute worst-case scenario short-circuit current that the local grid can deliver into the facility if something goes wrong. A major semiconductor plant will be connected to massive high-voltage transmission lines.
Right, the big stuff.
If a fault occurs, the power grid will dump tens of thousands of amps into the plant's bus bars in a fraction of a second.
And that much current isn't just an electrical problem, it becomes a severe physical and mechanical problem, doesn't it?
It generates immense magnetic fields. The parallel copper bus bars will literally try to violently repel each other due to the electromagnetic forces.
Wait, violently repel each other? Oh, wow.
Yeah. And IEC 60909 is the mathematical rulebook for calculating those forces. If the calculated fault duty is unimaginably high, a single bus simply might not be able to physically survive the mechanical stress.
So they have to split it up.
Right. The engineers are forced to utilize a double bus layout, often running them split, just to manage the sheer volume of short-circuit energy and coordinate the protective breakers fast enough to prevent a fire.
So it's not just about keeping the lights on, it's about ensuring the facility doesn't tear itself apart at a subatomic level.
Exactly.
And the final variable in the IEC matrix ties back to the humans running the plant. Maintenance philosophy and life cycle economics.
For a critical facility, the utility or the plant operators will likely have strict safety mandates, stating that personnel cannot perform physical inspections, clean insulators, or test relays on a live bus.
Which is very reasonable.
Definitely. If you have a single bus, you must shut down the fab plant to let a human safely work inside the cabinet. With a double bus, the operator seamlessly transitions the load to bus B, safely grounds bus A, and the maintenance crew can work comfortably inside the de-energized cabinet while the plant continues making microchips.
Over a 30-year life cycle, the ability to perform regular, exhaustive preventative maintenance without losing a single dollar of production revenue makes the exorbitant upfront costs of the double bus bar and the bus coupler seem like a bargain.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, when you zoom out and look at the actual power grid surrounding us, the application of this matrix creates very clear architectural boundaries.
What do you mean?
The distribution substation serving suburban neighborhoods and retail strip malls, where the economic impact of an outage is relatively low, almost exclusively utilize single bus bars.
But when you trace those lines back up the chain to the major arteries, the critical 132 kV grid substations, massive 220 kV transmission hubs routing power between cities, and the hyperscale data centers processing global financial transactions, you find the double bus bar scheme operating universally.
Neither scheme wins in a vacuum. It is an intentional, delicate balance. The single bus minimizes the sheer volume of equipment and the initial capital layout. The double bus minimizes operational constraints, maintenance downtime, and catastrophic risk.
It's all about risk.
Exactly. The topology of a facility is the physical copper and steel manifestation of that facility's risk tolerance.
Well, to bring this full circle, bus bar topologies aren't just arbitrary preferences drawn by an architect. They are highly calculated answers to an intense, high-stakes physics problem. Single buses save space and capex. Double buses save time, maintenance, and protect against catastrophic system-wide collapse.
They define the resilience of the invisible infrastructure we all rely on every day.
They really do. But before we wrap up this deep dive into the source material, I want to leave you with a final lingering thought. Building on what we've learned about the physics of fault currents and the necessity of maintenance, think about the changing reality of the world outside your window.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing extreme weather events. Lethal heat waves, deep freezes, and unprecedented storms increasing in both frequency and severity. Our aging power grids are being pushed far beyond their original design limits, demanding much more frequent and urgent maintenance just to survive the summer.
It forces us to question if the historical risk matrices we've been using are still valid.
Exactly. If a single point of failure at a neighborhood substation can take down power for an entire community during a life-threatening heat wave, will the cheap and simple single bus bar model eventually become too much of an unacceptable liability?
That is the big question.
As the demands of climate resilience clash with the reality of aging infrastructure, how long until the zero downtime double bus bar ceases to be a luxury for data centers and becomes the mandatory life-saving standard everywhere despite the staggering cost? It is definitely something to mull over the next time you hear a generator kick on during a storm. Keep questioning the hidden architecture of your everyday life. Thanks for joining us.